You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, attending college is more expensive than ever, and for many students, a medical emergency or car repair can make paying for school an impossible task. We'll hear how a UW-Milwaukee program is helping students pay those unexpected bills and focus on the classroom. First, Irma was downgraded to a tropical storm earlier today, but it continues to move into the southeastern United States with heavy winds and downpour. Meanwhile, debris, severe flooding, and power outages have been left in the storm's wake. Here's a clip from the Weather Channel earlier today.
It is weaker, but still in Jacksonville, still seething.
The 8 o'clock update. Irma has been downgraded to a tropical storm. We have record storm surge in Jacksonville, Florida, and now flooding is beginning in Georgia.
Jonathan Erdman is a senior meteorologist at weather.com. He's based in Waukesha County. He joins us today from Atlanta to bring us up to date on Irma. Jonathan, thanks a lot for joining us.
Rob, it's a pleasure. Nice to talk to you today.
Well, you're not sheltered here in Wisconsin from the storm. You went down to Atlanta. What are you seeing there?
Well, it just looks like a bad weather day here. I'm looking out my hotel window here, looking out towards SunTrust Park, the new home of the Atlanta Braves, and I'm just seeing sheets of rain being driven by wind gusts from 40 to 60 miles per hour. Fortunately, I'm looking at some trees in the area. I haven't seen any branches down. But I know that hasn't been the case in other parts of Georgia, and the number of power outages is mounting in the state.
And where is Irma at this time?
Well, Rob, currently the center of Irma is now moving through parts of central Georgia, right around the Macon, Georgia area, if you're familiar with it, from driving from Wisconsin, say, to Florida. And it's still moving toward the northwest. It's now a minimal tropical storm with 50-mile-per-hour sustained winds. But it still is producing quite a bit of rain, and it's still having quite an impact in parts of the Carolinas, Georgia, Florida, and even Alabama.
Are we still talking about storm surges in some of those places?
Yes, Rob, that's pretty impressive about this storm. You know, the track of the storm has been basically from south to north. So if you envision the winds flowing counterclockwise around an area of low pressure like Irma, we've had a persistent fetch of south-to-north winds that have piled water into parts of South Carolina, the Georgia coast, and into parts of northeast Florida. And that long-lived fetch of winds has really contributed to the major tidal flooding that we've seen in Charleston, South Carolina, and in Jacksonville, Florida.
Now, it's looking like when all is said and done, the worst hit are going to be some of those islands in the Caribbean at the start of the first landfalls. What do we know about the damage it caused on its way toward the United States, the mainland United States?
Well, yes, that's the area that was hit the hardest when Irma was a Category 5 hurricane in Antigua and Barbuda, which is in the northern Leeward Islands, generally to the east of Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands. That particular group was hardest hit, as well as part of the British and U.S. Virgin Islands, and then also the Turks and Caicos down to the southeast of the Bahamas. That was when the hurricane was really at its fullest fury, with Category 5 winds of up to 185 miles per hour. And unfortunately, what we're hearing out of the island of Barbuda is that anywhere between 85 to 90% of the buildings have been damaged or destroyed. And unfortunately, that's what happens when you have a Category 5 hurricane's eyewall move right over you.
We're talking to Jonathan Erdman, senior meteorologist at weather.com. He's based in Waukesha County, talking to us now from Atlanta about Hurricane Irma, now Tropical Storm Irma. And Jonathan, of course, over the weekend, we were watching this hit Florida. What do we know about the track it took and the recovery now, the damage that people are still sorting out?
Well, Rob, the track was really interesting. You know, when you watch on television or you check a forecast online, you'll often see that forecast cone. And the reason the cone is there is because the track sometimes at the center of the hurricane can be uncertain even just one day out from it making landfall. And so it was quite interesting that the eyewall made a little bit of a right turn, a subtle right turn before it made its final Florida landfall near Marco Island. And as a result of that subtle turn, it moved inland over southwest Florida instead of what we had feared would happen, in a track basically just offshore of the west coast of Florida that would drive a storm surge into places like Fort Myers and the Tampa Bay area. So that subtle little jog to the right, while it was very bad for areas in, say, Collier County around Marco Island, and certainly in the Naples area, I think that preserved some areas of western Florida, say Apalachicola and Apalachee Bay and the Tampa Bay areas, from getting that feared big storm surge that we had worried about if the storm had stayed a little bit farther offshore in the eastern Gulf of Mexico. So that's not to minimize what happened in the lower Keys, which took the hardest U.S. hit from that, at least on the mainland. Apparently there was about a 10 to 14 foot storm surge over the lower Keys. So if you can imagine those small lower Keys with, you know, just a foot or two above sea level having 10 to 14 feet of storm surge, you can imagine how frightening that must have been for someone who didn't evacuate.
And now on the scientific side of things, what does it mean that we've downgraded Irma from a hurricane to a tropical storm?
Well, you know, there's not a heck of a lot of difference between a 70-mile-per-hour tropical storm and a 75-mile-per-hour hurricane as far as impact is concerned. And one of the aspects of Irma is that its wind field, in other words, its aerial scope of tropical storm force winds was quite large, you know, not nearly as large as what we saw with Superstorm Sandy in 2012, but it was quite large. It was about, it had a diameter of about over 500 miles. If you think of it as roughly a circle. So these tropical storm force winds have spread quite far inland, as I mentioned earlier, into parts of North Georgia, including the Atlanta metro area, and also into parts of Alabama, and even in the parts of the southern Appalachians in eastern Tennessee and western North Carolina. So even though it's been, you know, quote, downgraded, it's still having some pretty significant impacts in wind and rain and, as we talked about earlier, coastal flooding.
Now, we've seen Irma make landfall just a couple weeks after Hurricane Harvey. Can you talk about the historical significance there?
Yeah, Rob, this is really something. You know, we've had some recent luck with hurricane seasons in the past several years. You know, before we had Matthew last year hit the East Coast, we had gone a few years without any significant landfalls. You know, we had a lot of wind shear in the atmosphere and dry air. But what we've seen here is the first time in history that we've had two Category 4 hurricane landfalls happen in the same hurricane season in the continental U.S. Harvey, and then Irma was a Category 4 when it officially made landfall in the lower Keys yesterday. So that had never happened before in the same season. Even the really busy 2004 and 2005 hurricane seasons where we had Katrina, Rita, Wilma, and we had the four Florida hurricanes in 2004. We didn't have two Category 4 storms hit in the same season. So this is a quite impressive stretch, and unfortunately it comes at quite a price for the U.S.
Now, I understand Hurricane Jose was out there. What do we know about that? Is that going to be anything on a par with the other two?
Yeah, Jose has been out there for quite some time, even as we've been, most of our attention has been on Irma. Right now, Jose is kind of in the Bermuda Triangle, so it's between Bermuda, the southeast Bahamas, but well north of Hispaniola, and it's basically taking a tight clockwise loop over the next several days. And we think by this weekend, the Hurricane Jose will be somewhere to the northeast of the northwest Bahamas. Now, the question becomes whether Jose then curls safely out to sea early about this time next week, or if it gets a little too close to parts of the southeastern United States where we may get at least a brush of tropical storm force winds in the Carolinas, or if it gets close enough that we have to worry about potentially another hurricane strike somewhere in the East Coast early next week. It's just too early to tell right now, but we're still going to have to keep a close eye on it, and yeah, it's a little hard to fathom that we could be looking at a third straight hurricane strike if this Hurricane Jose doesn't turn sharply enough next week.
Before we're done, Jonathan, I want to shift gears. There's been, at least online, a lot of conversation about meteorologists and weather forecasters and journalists going outside in the midst of storms for coverage of those storms. So you see them on video in a place where everybody's been told to take shelter. What do you think about how this is covered by journalists and meteorologists on the ground?
Well, of course, you know, I do work for weather.com and the Weather Company and the Weather Channel. So, you know, for full disclosure,
sure.
we don't send our meteorologists out in the field purposefully in harm's way when their personal safety is at risk. They are experienced. They know how there are logistical things that they do to make sure they're in a safe enough location, but yet can still show you the impacts. So I think it can be done. As long as you have experience and are a professional in doing so, but certainly I share the concern among the public that it's you know, we don't want to encourage people to go out there and film and become YouTube stars if they don't know what they're doing and if they don't understand the power of moving water and if they don't understand that high winds can carry debris with them and that debris can be projectiles. You know, people can certainly get hurt doing that. So, so you really need to know what you do. You either need to be a professional storm chaser with experience, or you need to be a meteorologist or a member of the news media that has had experience covering these storms to keep you safe. It can be done, but again, we don't recommend that someone without experience try that.
Jonathan, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure.
That's Jonathan Erdman, senior meteorologist at weather.com. He joined us from Atlanta today to offer the latest news about hurricane and now tropical storm Irma.